to record. My apologies.
Recording is on.
Thank you for the assist. Okay, so welcome to the W3C CCG meeting. I'm going to review the agenda, and starting off with an IP note, anyone can participate in these calls. However, all substantive contributors to any CCG work items must be members of the CCG with full IPR agreement signed. Anyone can have a W3 account without being a W3 corporate member, and you have to sign the community contributor license agreement. These meetings and an audio recording of everything said on this call are archived at the GitHub for the CCG. We will use IRC to queue speakers during the call, as well as to take minutes. You can use the IRC or the Jitsi chat. They're linked. All attendees should type present plus to get your name in the attendee list in the transcript. In IRC, type Q plus to add yourself to the queue with an optional reminder. If you're not in IRC, simply ask to be put on the queue. Please be brief so the rest of the queue can get a chance to chime in. You can always requeue yourself. And note that this meeting is held by voice, not by IRC. So off-topic IRC comments are subject to deletion from the record. We work hard to manage a single thread of conversation so everyone can participate and be heard. So please respect the group process by joining the queue when you have something to contribute. We now need a volunteer to scribe. Are there any volunteers? Any volunteers to scribe before I start working through the scribe list? All right, so I'll start working through the scribe list. If we have any of these folks on, would appreciate scribing. Christopher Allen, I think he's on. Moses Ma. Drummond Reed. Justin Richer. Adam Lemon. Ganesh Anand. Jonathan Holt. Jonathan Kelly Cooper. Adrian Gropper. Chris Wazenski. Oh. Hello? Thank you. We really appreciate it, Adrian. And Adrian, I believe your microphone is a little bit faint, so and I'm happy to scribe on your behalf if you decide to participate in the conversation. All right, great. So moving on to the next section, we're going to do introductions and reintroductions. So if you're new to the community group, we'd love to hear about who you are and what your interests are. Would anyone like to introduce themselves to the group?
Michael Herman here. Maybe I'll just jump in quickly. I used to participate quite a bit in this group. I'm the founder of a project called the Trusted Digital Web. Two recent focal interests are personal data usage licensing, of which I've published a white paper. And also, I've been the guy who initiated this virtual credentials file format discussion in CCG. And I live on a cattle ranch in Alberta, Canada.
Thank you. Your contributions to the mailing list are appreciated. Welcome. Would anyone else like to introduce themselves? Okay, moving on to reintroductions. Would someone like to reintroduce themselves? Maybe you got a new job, you're working on a new project, you have something to announce to the group. Okay, I think, Joe, would you like to reintroduce yourself?
Sure. So,
I'm Joe Andrew. I'm the lead consultant at Legendary Requirements. I'm involved in the use case documents for both DCs and DIDs. And I wanted to reintroduce because I'm also involved with rebooting the Web of Trust. And we just sent out an announcement to members of an event, a salon we are doing next month, February 25th, in the morning Pacific time. And I will put that URL in chat. You're all invited. The space is limited, but you can check out that information. Thanks.
Thank you, Joe. That's great. Because I think the next topic is moving to announcements and reminders. So I will be sure to get that as an announcement because rebooting the Web of Trust is very adjacent and related to a lot of the work that we do here in the community group. A lot of good pollination happens between the two organizations. I believe that's all the announcements and reminders. I think the only other thing is that there's been a change in the biometrics conference that we have yet to update. Kalia mentioned the change on the last meeting. Does anyone else have an announcement or reminder they would like to share with the group? Feel free to cue yourself. Okay, great. So we're going to move over to progress on next items. On action items that have been selected for review. I believe that there are only two. They're just continuations from last week to maintain accountability here. I'm going to share a link that we use that you can also find in the agenda. Let me just share in Jitsi here. You can look at the same issues I'm going to go over. The first issue to review is the proposed task force for the infrastructure task force. We can remove the proposed task force. It is a task force now. We have all three chairs agreed on it. Kickoff date still pending. I think a lot of folks were busy with end of January things, so that doodle was not sent out, but I hope to send that out today. So my apologies for that delay. Any questions or comments about the infrastructure task force? We're hoping as a few of the proximate items to support, for example, an NPM repository for the community group for members to post things like test suites or other low stakes items at first. Okay, moving on, we have some revisit CCG work item templates as GitHub templates. I don't think this one should actually be in the... Oh, I see. I tried to remove the label earlier, but that didn't work. Okay. The only other item that we wanted to review before we get to the updates from the ecosystem, learning from the last co-chair election, there have been developments in this thread. It seems that the objections that were raised were satisfied. Since last week, the major changes are that we have simplified the requirements for voting eligibility for chair elections, charter amendments, and other matters to have simply signed the contributors agreement and join the group. So it seems that there are no more objections, and I believe that we are elapsing the two-week period where we can just accept this charter. I'll probably do one more announcement that we have, but then we should be cleared to proceed to chair elections in a short manner. Let me just make sure there's a link here for anyone who wants to follow locally, but it's this issue I'm talking about. A lot of long discussion, you know, a lot of the changes were discussed back and forth since December. So it's been out there for quite a while. If you have any, other last minute, objections, you know, please be raise them very soon or else, this seems that it will be the charter. Heather, you're on the queue.
Hey, yeah. Thanks, Wayne. You guys able to hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. So I just wanted to, ask a question about the timing. Do we need to wait to have this change in the charter to be accepted, or when is this like locked and loaded and done?
Yeah, so we've announced formally on the public mailing list about 2 weeks ago that there were changes, and there have been objections raised with respect to membership criteria for voting eligibility, and I think we've since satisfied all those objections. So I don't see why we would have to, start another 2 week period. I think the changes can pass. And that's why I think it's appropriate to just mail that's about to happen to the mailing list, see if there's any last objection, and then just proceed, with the charter.
Okay. So that's great. So like what, 24 hours? The reason I'm asking is that, I have all of the election stuff ready to go, mm-hmm. and it is dependent on the acceptance of the charter. I can't do any of that. So I just want to know how much time I need to wait before I make that announcement.
So I think perhaps if we give folks, until Monday or something, and then we can act as if the charter was accepted, if nothing gets flagged. I think that would be acceptable. Does anyone here object to that moving forward?
So just to make sure I understand the dates then. So the Monday, Feb 8th EOD is the deadline for any feedback on the changes to the charter based on the objections we had. And then after the 8th, I can do the election kickoff.
Yep, that sounds right to me. And that would be more than the 2 weeks since the announcement to the list. So I think it's just good not to rush these things.
No, that sounds great. Thank you.
Okay, great. Thank you for the attention to detail there. So, that concludes our issue review. That's the next step for that. Things are moving along. Now we can move over to updates from the ecosystem. Let me just make sure that's the next item. Yes, I believe so. And we'll start with Marcus. Marcus, could you please remind us what the DID Resolver Task Force is set out to do? Can you talk to us about developments and recent progress? We'd really appreciate it.
Yes, absolutely. Can you hear me?
Yep, just fine.
Okay, thanks. So DID resolution is one of the work items in this in the credentials community group. It's a draft specification that tries to cover the DID resolution process. DID resolution means how do you get from a DID to a DID document. The current status is that in the last few months, the work has been stalled a little bit. So the last call was about 2 months ago at the end of November. There were no calls in December or January. One of the reasons is that, just to be very, very transparent, I've been busy with a lot of other things. So I didn't really have time to work on it or prepare for the calls. However, the other reason is that there's a strong dependency of the work on the DID core specification in the DID working group, right? So DID resolution depends on DID core. And previously, when we started the work on the DID resolution specification, the scope and the boundary between DID core and DID resolution was very clear. In the DID core specification, the DID working group, we were working on DID syntax and DID methods and the DID document data model, but we were not working on DID resolution. So the idea was that the DID resolution specification as a work item in this group would cover the DID resolution part, which was not in the DID core specification in the DID working group. Then at some point, the DID working group decided that some aspects of DID resolution were also in scope for the DID core specification, specifically what we've been calling the contracts, the interfaces, defining what are the inputs and what are the outputs of a resolution function. And so a lot of the work that we had done in deed resolution here in this group became in scope for the deed core specification, the deed working group. Things like, what's the relationship between a deed and the deed URL? What's the relationship between resolving and dereferencing? What are the inputs and outputs of these functions? And things are still changing a little bit in deed core in the deed working group. Even right now, there are some pull requests and some open issues related to deed resolution. And of course, all of these things then impact what we have done so far in the separate deed resolution specification. And therefore, we didn't really work much on this specification while there was related work happening in deed core. I don't know how much time you want me to spend on this. If there's more time, I could share my screen and I could show a little bit what's in scope right now in the deed resolution specification. What's the current content? I could give
present within the next 2 to 3 minutes with any visuals that you want. That would be great.
Okay, and I will try to share my screen. Is that working? Can you see it?
Yeah, we can see.
Okay, so this is the deed core specification, the deed working group, right? You will see that there is a section on deed resolution, and this defines functions and inputs and outputs. So this was previously in scope for the deed resolution specification, but by now this is also in the deed core specification. So what is it that remains for the deed resolution specification? I think is the main question. And I can go a little bit over the table of contents to give you an idea. So the two sections, one that's called resolving a deed and one that's called dereferencing a deed URL. This mirrors closely what we have in deed core. However, deed core defines what are the inputs and what are the outputs of these functions, but deed core doesn't define a concrete algorithm or a concrete set of rules, how you arrive at certain outputs given certain inputs. So that's one thing that the deed resolution specification right now is still trying to do, define an algorithm. How do you arrive at certain inputs and certain outputs? What is the metadata that's returned in certain cases, for example? Another thing that we've spent a lot of time working on in this work item in the deed resolution specification is architecture. So it's important to point out always that deed resolution is not a single protocol, right? Like HTTP or DNS resolution. Those are concrete client-server protocols. Deed resolution is not like that. Deed resolution can be implemented in many different ways. A deed resolver can be a local library. A deed resolver can be a hosted service. So that is abstract function definitions which can be implemented and realized in different ways through different architectures. There are concepts such as local resolvers, remote resolvers, and there are questions around how do you trust a resolver if you're not hosting it yourself? How does a resolver access the deed document when it resolves the deed? For example, if you have a deed method that uses a blockchain, then do you run your own local full node, or are you relying on some remote API service for resolution? So this section here tries to cover some architectural and trust related questions regarding to architectures of deed methods and also architectures for deed resolvers in general. There are topics such as client-side dereferencing. There's some diagrams how you could if you want to dereference a certain DDRL, then, for example, a DDRL with a fragment, then parts of that could be done by a hosted service, and then parts of it dereferencing the fragment part, for example, could be done locally by a client. So there are a lot of these architectural questions when you go through DID resolution or DDRL dereferencing, and what parts of the process happen in which part of a system, and what are the underlying, what are the implications for trust and security. So there are some examples and diagrams for that. And then maybe the two sections in the specification that have had the most impact, perhaps, or the most relevance in the community are these two. One that's called DID resolution result, and one that's about bindings. The one that says DID resolution result, that defines a JSON-LD data structure which contains the return values of the DID resolution function. In the DID core specification, we're saying that that resolution returns a DID document plus two types of metadata, resolution metadata and DID document metadata. But in the DID core specification, we're not defining a concrete format for what that would actually look like. So that's one thing that this specification does, define a concrete JSON-LD document format that contains a DID document plus metadata. And another thing that the specification also defines is an HTTP binding. So if you want to expose the resolution function as an HTTP API, then how do you map the inputs and the outputs to HTTP? How do certain concepts in DID resolution map to HTTP status codes and HTTP headers? So for example, we're saying if you try to resolve a DID and the DID doesn't exist, then if you expose that over HTTP, then you would probably use the standard HTTP status code not found 404. So that's something that this section does, but with the other understanding that DID resolution has no dependency on HTTP, right? It's just one way of invoking a DID resolution function. So that's it, basically. Those are the things in general that I think are still in scope for this document. But like I said, progress has been a bit slower because of the intense progress on the core specification and the dependencies that we have here.
Marcus, great summary. And it sounds like you're open for collaborators to chip in. How would they get involved?
Yeah, so we haven't had the calls. There's a meeting page, which itself, there's also a suggestion to upgrade the whole infrastructure and to upgrade the meeting process to be more consistent with other groups, such as the educational credentials group. So we have biweekly meetings planned. We haven't had any meetings for 2 months. The next meeting, according to this schedule, will be next Monday, which I'd be happy to host. So perhaps I'm because of this lack of progress, I think I'm especially grateful for the opportunity to talk about it today, and perhaps doing the call at the regular time next Monday would be a good opportunity to review this in a bit more detail. So I would like to invite anyone who is interested to go over this and look at the current status, because there are lots of things that need to be aligned still with DID core, and lots of the open issues in the repository, and there's a lot of work still to do. But at the same time, I feel pretty strongly that this work is still needed and still relevant, despite the fact that DID core is also covering some of it by now. So if you want to get involved, I'll send an email to the list with the next meeting and link to the meeting page.
Okay, great. Manu, you're in the queue.
Yeah, just to underscore what Marcus just said, plus one, this work is still very relevant and needed and necessary. You know, the reason this work isn't a part of the regular of the official DID working group is just there wasn't enough of it formed by the time we started the group, and the group needed to focus on, you know, the member W3C membership likes to see working groups focus on one primary thing. But that said, I feel like this spec, the DID resolution spec, is the next natural spec to go into the official standardization process. I think what happened with a part of this spec getting subsumed into the DID working group, was weird. Like it would have been much easier to keep the two things distinct and clean, but a lot of people really wanted to understand how DID resolution was going to work, and therefore we kind of started, you know, working on it in the DID working group, and it you know, was a snowball that kept growing and growing. And we're trying to limit the size of that snowball growing, right? And I fully expect that at some point that stuff that we have in the DID core spec will move back into the DID resolution spec, and there'll once again be a very clear distinction between the two specifications. I think that would be a healthy thing to happen. So all that to say, you know, plus one, totally agree with Marcus. This is still very relevant work. It's still, you know, very much needed. And I would imagine that it's probably the next DID thing that we need to put into an official working group. That's it.
Thanks, Manu. And this is an excellent segue to our next speaker and update, Brent Zundel, who is a co-chair of the DID working group at W3C. Brent, would you tell us a little bit about DID Core? What are the problems that DID Core was set out to solve? You know, how have we been doing against that progress? Oh, Marcus, you're still sharing your screen just for your information.
Thanks. I'm trying to find out how to.
Brent, would love to hear from you about, you know, the goals of DID Core, how the journey has been. What is CR? Why is that important? Maybe a little bit about that process, and any other updates you'd like to give.
Hey folks, everybody hear me?
Just fine.
So the DID core specification, as many of you know, was incubated right here. A lot of it was worked on in rebooting Web of Trust sessions. I remember a marathon that happened in Boston, unrelated to running, but very related to DIDs. And all of that work became the heart of what we started with in the DID working group. We have been trying to define a data model for DID documents. We've been trying to define what exactly a DID looks like, what part of it belongs to the DID method, what parts of it can be added to define DID URLs, and what do these additional parameters look like. And we've been defining what a DID method specification is supposed to be doing and working on, what they need to define in their own specifications. We've been working on a test suite to test the normative statements in the spec. And all of this gradually working toward and working according to the W3C process. So what we started with, we call a working draft. And that working draft is relatively fluid as a document goes. The working draft sees changes regularly. When you submit a PR to, against the specification, when that PR is merged, the working draft is automatically updated to include the changes. Now, in order to proceed and turn this into an official W3C recommendation, which is what they call, you know, the final specification, we need to have periods of testing and review. We began some of the horizontal review a few months ago as we've approached what we call CR, which is the candidate recommendation phase. It's the first step toward, hey, we think this document is mature enough now to, you know, be someday a W3C specification. What CR means is that it's to the point where implementers can take it, build against it, and see if it works for them or see where it breaks. During CR, we can't make any substantive changes to the spec. We can clean up language here and there. We can fix minor errors, but the spec really is expected at this point to be pretty static. If, as is probably inevitable, we do discover errors in the specification that are substantive, we will need to revise the candidate recommendation and officially enter another phase of the candidate recommendation implementation process. The ultimate goal is a final recommendation. To this end, the last day to submit pull requests to resolve open issues for this version of the specification is the 9th of February. So any folks in this group who want to see the list of issues, you're more than welcome to go to our GitHub repository, see the remaining issues as they get whittled down. Yeah, most of the big things have been resolved over time. You know, those who are familiar with what the DID spec looked like after it left incubation in the community group, there are things about it you might not recognize now. Huge structural things like it's defined as an abstract data model that then has representations in JSON, JSON-LD, and even CBOR. We've introduced the notion of a DID spec registry process where extensions to the specification can be defined, where DID methods are now defined, or registered rather. That's not where the definition is. That's just where the registration happens. We've had many very in-depth conversations about the proper way to do things in order to maintain privacy while still enabling some of the important use cases in the community. And I hope for the most part we've succeeded there. It really does have one of the most outstanding use cases documents that has ever been seen. So I highly encourage everybody to check that out. I feel like I'm rambling at this point, so unless there's specific questions, maybe I'll stop talking.
Yeah, does anyone have questions or comments for Brent? You get to ask a co-chair of the working group, you know, your questions about DIDs. I have some that I might ask, but I'd like to, you know, give everyone an opportunity if they do have questions or comments. Marcus, you have the floor.
Just something quick I forgot to say earlier, but it's also important. I just wanted to also acknowledge Dimitri, who is also listed as editor of the resolution specification, and he also contributed and helped a lot figure out the relationship between the two specifications and generally how the resolution works. So he's also someone I think really understands the relationship between the two specs since he has worked on both.
Yeah, thank you, Dimitri. We appreciate your contributions, and you seem to be connecting a lot of things together. We hope to even draw connections to possibly the Solid project one day, or those that might be happening already. So thanks. Manu, you're on the queue.
Yeah, just a quick question for Brent. Could you reiterate kind of the timeline and what the next couple of months should entail with the working group and specification?
Yeah. So, like I said, the deadline for PRs to be submitted is the 9th. These are PRs that would introduce substantive or normative changes to the spec. So 9th of February, PR deadline. After that, there will be a flurry of editorial and other activity to resolve those PRs, to either accept them or modify them in some way to get them accepted. Once the PRs are in and all issues that can be closed have been closed, we'll have complete editorial run-through of the spec. Ideally, by the end of February, we will formally transition into candidate recommendation. And this begins a period of a couple months where implementers give us feedback. They run tests in the test suite and raise issues, and horizontal review at that point can also raise some issues against the spec, but we anticipate most of those are already in. And ideally, the spec gets more and more refined editorially while staying strong substantively, and we can then transition out of candidate recommendation into proposed recommendation, which is the final, you know, hey, speak now or forever hold your peace. This is going to be a spec.
Thanks for that answer. And Brent, I'm wondering, in your opinion, what do you think are the biggest risks and potential blockers along the way, whether that's internal to the DID working group or even within W3C proper?
I think that most of the risks and blockers, those are things that have been raised as issues already. We have one of the most extensive security and privacy consideration sections of any specification out there. As we try to find the balance between, you know, appropriate privacy concerns and, you know, usability, we've had extensive conversations around, you know, very nuanced things like the DID resolution interface that Marcus spoke of. You know, months and months of conversations back and forth. Hey, I really want DIDs to do this thing. Is it possible? Is it a good idea? Is it a bad idea? Those conversations have come and gone. I feel like, of course, saying this now, they're going to spring up on the horizon, but I feel like most of the big issues have been handled. So spec wise, I think we're pretty darn solid. Politics wise in the W3C, the DID spec is not on the same ground as the VC spec was. Those of you who were involved in that work from the beginning to the end, there was evident vocal opposition to the work that we were trying to do, and numerous attempts, especially near the end, to slow it in the name of refinement. The view toward what we're trying to do seems to be gradually shifting within the W3C. As an example of that, I was invited by, you know, some W3C folks to take part in a W3C presentation to the FIDO Alliance today. I got to share what DIDs are and, you know, what we're building with the spec, and to, you know, introduce those notions to the FIDO folks, and, you know, we'll see what happens from there. But I'm at this point not anticipating a lot of that kind of opposition as we move forward. We'll see, of course, but I'm pretty hopeful.
That's great to hear. I think it's great how aligned the ecosystem is just on, you know, the views on privacy, on data control, et cetera. You know, when you disagree about the actual goal, that's where it's really difficult to reconcile, but it's more easy to reconcile how to get there. And it sounds like that's where we are. So that's very positive to hear. And Manu, you're on the queue.
Yeah, plus one. And to build on what both Brent and Wayne said, the CCG has been instrumental in helping us make this entire thing a bit smoother than what we had with verifiable credentials. You know, there's a big community here. We can point to a big community. There's lots of interest. And that provides, you know, enough people watching to prevent political shenanigans that were, you know, happening during the VC spec day. So it's been much smoother. Of course, you know, with a ton of thanks to, you know, the chairs, both in, core, or in the DID working group and the staff contact there. And, so that's, you know, Brent and Dan and Yvonne and, you know, with, again, lots of help, from the CCG chairs, in this group. So all that has been great. And it feels like we've got like a really good pipeline built where we, incubate specs in the CCG and send them to, official standardization. And I think the DID spec is the first example of that going really smoothly. I did want to highlight there's one other thing that's coming up probably in the next 2 months that is of interest probably to the CCG. One of the requirements for any W3C specification is that you prove that you have done a significant horizontal review. That basically means you have knocked on everybody's door and asked them to look at the specification and see if they agree with it and if it works for them and all that kind of stuff. When we enter the candidate recommendation phase, there's going to be an opportunity for the CCG, either as a group or just individual people in the CCG, to go and read the spec and tell us what you think about it. You know, raise issues, suggest changes, all that kind of stuff. In that, I think, you know, just keep that in the back of your mind. If you've been wanting to know when the specification is in a state where you should be able to read it and count on what's in there, that day's coming up. You know, it's going to be towards the end of February, early March. And we'll probably, you know, kind of announce it as, something that's ready for review to this group. That's it.
Thank you. See, the queue is empty. Are there any other questions for Marcus or Brent before we move on to the recap about the diff face-to-face? Okay, moving on. I believe we are joined by Balaj and Juan, who have an update for us with respect to the Decentralized Identity Foundation's face-to-face. Perhaps someone can give an update on why a face-to-face is part of the standard proceedings of DIF, what the value of it was, and what were some interesting topics discussed, how was it held. We heard some interesting news about gather.town. Excited to hear how that went.
Hello, everyone. It's Balaj Nemati from DIF. I'm going to try to share my screen. Screen sharing failed. Juan, can you share your screen?
Yeah, sure. I should be able to do that.
Ah, great. Yeah, thanks everyone. So a little bit of the background of the face-to-face. It essentially started as an actual face-to-face meeting for DIF about 2.5 years ago was the first one. So we had I will get there. Next slide, I guess, just to give a quick overview. So what we want to talk about is like, yeah, what is face-to-face and like how they came to host the first ones, and how it changed over time. So the goal was that DIF, as it was created, was to like work on a number of decentralized identity related work items, across multiple working groups. But like after funding it, the group kind of realized that sometimes there is like misalignment between the different groups and sometimes working in the same room kind of can speed things up. So the idea of hosting a face-to-face session around the time of IIW would make sense because anyways, a lot of folks travel to attend IIW in person. So it's kind of a good timing to, if you are there, just extend your trip and have a face-to-face closed door session. So those internal, those closed doors face-to-face, the first three were actually IPR protected and they were more workshop-like, hammering out a couple of questions that were in people's mind in like in words and not just PRs. sometimes creating more effectiveness, sometimes not, but definitely bonding people and not just work. And since this year, we switched to a virtual format, as last year has changed a lot of things. But with the virtual format, we also felt that, it probably would make more sense to, instead of trying to host a hackathon-like online session for only members, try to open up the event and change the format from workshop-like towards something that is more education, more helping the community to understand what where it stands, helping all the working group have a very clear view where other working groups are standing, and sort of enable members and non-members to ask questions and potentially consider implementing some of those solutions or joining the work that were presented. And then basically there was a big upgrade from last June's meeting to this year's January meeting, that the first virtual was a plain and only Zoom room that we hosted for like 6 or 7 hours. And we got a few complaints that was maybe a little bit too harsh. So we looked for some alternative tools, and we found GatherTown as an interesting extension for Zoom rooms, as it offers some like virtual game like interaction space. And so we had like 2 Zoom rooms parallel and a GatherTown with 3 additional sort of like collaborative rooms where Google Docs were possible to be used. You can see on the screen a little screenshot from the space we created for the event. We had about 122 people at that peak in the main Zoom room. And parallel, we had 50 people in the workshop room. And with a big overlap, there was like 110 people in GatherTown. So it is definitely a huge success, and many people were interested in hearing where the diff-maintained work items are standing. And yeah, if anyone on this call was there, and thank you very much, and hope you enjoyed it. And maybe Juan, shall I hand over for you for the content?
Sure. Content is my middle name. So when we tried to experiment a little with a unconference format so that members could set up more peer-to-peer sessions that weren't not speaking on behalf of working groups, but just sort of speaking on behalf of work items or proposed work items. So I think the main stage content, as we called it by analogy to music festivals, was the usual report outs from each of the groups. And most of that is in a link. I put a link in the chat here. So let me see if I can... So if you... So we put together a Medium article with a paragraph about each of the sessions and a video. So if you're curious about any of the working groups, you've lost touch, you want a little status update from any of them, I recommend going and checking out this article. But I think one of the most, Wayne asked for highlights. For me, one of the highlights was Marcus showing this graph of Universal Resolver adoption statistics over time. That was very interesting. I also think a lot of the non-technical groups, which I have been a big champion of but never actually make it to, I seem to have a lot of conflicts those times, those were also good. The healthcare, finance and banking, and product managers UX group. So I definitely recommend, if you think you have a good grip on all of the technical progress happening at Diff, but you aren't familiar with these three groups, I definitely recommend you, following the link to this article, watching those videos, or following the links to their GitHubs to see recordings of old meetings. And the product managers group in particular produces a lot of really useful mental maps and diagrams and sort of deliverables that I think are very useful to people working on UX, not just for commercial products. So yeah, that would be my recommendation of the highlights. And in terms of the other groups, let me paste that again. There you go. And the in terms of the highlights from the member stage, I think one of the most interesting for me were the many sessions on work items inside of Diff or outside of Diff. For instance, there was Kimberly Lindson from Randa talked about a proof of concept, or I guess you'd call it productive trial, in the real world, looking at comprehensive learner records being used in the field. That was really cool to see. ID Union talked about sort of governance problems of a nonprofit community indie network, which is really interesting, happening here in Germany. And yeah, there were a lot of talks about Eric Welton talked about a research project to sort of build on and create open source tooling for careful use of the DID rubrics, sort of thoughtful research on DID method comparisons to assist decision makers in doing due diligence. And yeah, a lot of these sessions were on future work items, a use case for carry, claims and credentials work item from led by the Affinity guys. Yeah, and updates from OIDF, all cool stuff. Those were my highlights. so yeah, here's the link, and that is all I prepared.
Great, thank you. That was an excellent summary. Really appreciate you all coming here and giving the update. Does anyone have questions or comments that they'd like to share with the group? Feel free to cue yourself. Manu, you're on the cue.
Yeah, it's same kind of question for Balaj and Juan. What are the next what's the next three, six months, year looking like for Diff? So, you know, there are a number of work items that are being, worked on. There's one joint work item between the CCG and the Diff, which is great. The general question is, where's Diff headed? Is it, you know, going to turn into, kind of an industry body that does, publishes, interoperability recommendations or does, conformance testing, or is it going to continue to be kind of a place things are incubated and then handed off to, other, global SSOs, standard setting organizations? What's kind of the diff strategy for the next 6 months to a year?
there was a meeting today at the biweekly, a new proposed working group charter was discussed
that might be a partial answer to that question, which would be an IPR protected group to do, maybe not so much, conformance testing, but, interop profile work, like helping people navigate existing industry standards and regulatory frameworks and publish specifications, on security requirements or identity assurance requirements, for wallets. So that is a, maybe a middle step, a working group that looks like today's DIFF working groups that might inch towards a more, like you said, bridging role between, interoperability profiles and, I don't know, trade association-like, role, but, it is not chartered to be a trade association. So I don't think it'll go too far in that direction. And, questions about, I mean, it's a member organization, so how far it goes in a certification direction is kind of up to the members. There's no immediate plans to do anything more aggressive on that front. In terms of interoperability, like test suite maintenance and documentation, I think the interop group at DIFF is planning to produce some material, sort of educational material more than sophisticated test harnesses or anything, after the March plugathon, hopefully just in a, you know, in a complimentary way, whatever CCG would rather not do, hopefully filling in gaps there. But I'm not sure that was exactly what you were asking.
Thanks for the answer, Juan. I think we have time for one more question from Michael.
Oh, well, hopefully I get a question and answer. So just at a meta level, like as I re-engage like with the W3C and CCG and DIFF and the Sovereign Foundation, there's getting to be more and more overlap. And it would be nice to see something that would clarify the different roles of these larger organizations and the different roles of these working groups within those organizations. You know, maybe we need some industry consolidation. I think it would be helpful.
I agree, but I'm not sure I have an answer. I think I hope that I tend to vote for whatever I think is the most complementary role anytime there's a discussion of what DIFF's role should be. I'd like to think that complementarity is something we're working towards. I don't know how to answer that more. I can't answer on behalf of anyone other than DIFF. and that the answer to that might have to come from outside of any one organization.
Yeah, thanks for the answer and questions. We're at time, but I think this is important user feedback as an ecosystem. You know, someone who's been a great contributor and returning, commenting on there are a bunch of organizations that it's kind of curious how they all fit together, not challenging, you know, any of them, but it's just kind of like what's the fastest way to understand the ecosystem, I think was the concern. So definitely.
Sorry, I was on the queue to answer that, actually.
Oh, I'm sorry. I missed that. Go ahead, Heather.
Yeah, that's okay. Everyone loves this idea of having us all collaborating and working together. And that's something I'd like to see as well. But I think if you just take the pragmatic approach, you realize that that's just never going to happen. People are going to do work in silos and some of them are going to collaborate and some of them aren't. There are a lot of personalities in this community and a lot of, preferences as far as technology and implementation styles. So I think it's probably, while that's a dream we would love to have happen, and that's definitely, we want to facilitate that here in the CCG, I think just taking a pragmatic approach is that that's never going to happen, and there's always going to be work that's being done in different groups, secretly. I mean, I don't mean like secretly, like, you know, just in different silos with different intentions and different things. And I think that just shows what a robust marketplace this is. So just wanted to put my, say some comments on that. Thanks, great. Wayne.
Yep, definitely a lot of opinions, and I'm glad that people hold them strongly, but and I think that I love how diverse the space is. So we're over time, so we'll see you next week. Thanks for coming to the CCG meeting. Adrian, once again, thanks for scribing.